Welcome to Rangers Blue Line, covering the blue shirts from the SNY studios. Here's your host, Brian Compton.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Rangers Blue Line. I'm Brian Compton. I'll be joined by Brett Sergalis from the New York Post in just a few minutes. We've now made it easier for you to listen to all of SNY.TV's original podcasts. If you're a fan of the Mets, Jets, Knicks, Rangers, Islanders, or college basketball and recruiting, just subscribe to the SNY.TV audio network on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's the SNY.TV audio network, and please make sure to rate and review our channel. Nick, Adam, both in studio today. How are you guys?
Doing all right.
Can't complain.
You can't complain? I think we have lots to complain about.
As far as I'm going, doing, I can't complain. Right. Yeah, the Rangers, there's plenty to complain
Rangers,
about.
Not so much. Just a brutal way for the season to end. So many hopes and dreams of a parade down the Canyon of Heroes when we reconvened last September when training camp got underway. We didn't think it was a great matchup. I thought after game two that they had a fighter's chance. Lundqvist was great, but then, boy, oh boy, did the wheels fall off.
Everything just all – I think Alain Vigneault hit it perfectly when he said that the turning point in the series is when they took that penalty up 1-0 in game three, where Crosby scored late in the second period, and then obviously Yandel and Boyle run into each other.
Yeah.
Cullen scores. And that just totally – eliminated the Rangers right then and there. They didn't have anything the rest of the series.
Everything that the regular season foreshadowed as potentially going wrong went wrong. Yeah. And it just rained a whole lot of wrong in games four and five. What did they give up, 10, 11 goals?
It was brutal. And you know what? This is not an I told you so moment, but going into the series, for me, it was the breakdowns defensively that we saw time and time again before the playoffs got underway. You can't have those breakdowns against those talented forwards. And the speed was my other fear. Those defensemen had no chance. I mean, you knew before the series started that Carl Hagelin was going to burn those guys. And that's exactly what we saw.
Yeah, the Rangers just didn't have an answer to the speed. I thought they would try and slow the Penguins down with their forwards and with the forecheck. But Vigneault went away from having a defensive top line when he separated Stepan and Nash. Something like 10 minutes into the first period of game one, I think they were pulled. And the Rangers just never got it back together. That not a single line had an advantage. The third line, which another one where I thought the Rangers had a distinct advantage with Eric Staal, nothing.
Nothing. Nothing. It really was. It was bad. And I'll tell you what, Lundqvist wasn't great after game two. I know he got pulled in games four and five. Where do you stand on Hank Adam? He wasn't good, but he had no help whatsoever.
I don't blame. I mean, he deserves a little bit of blame.
Of course he does.
Because the difference between when Henrik Lundqvist is Henrik Lundqvist as we know him to be and just a regular goalie is when he makes those extra saves. And those extra saves are the Cullen goal in game three and some of the other goals when he's beaten cleanly. You know, they were so bad in front of him, but you do expect Lundqvist to make some of those saves. You know, and then the Rangers lose that game 3-1 instead of, you know, 15-0, which they did lose. So that's where I kind of thought, if he's not making those saves, then the Rangers have zero chance.
Yeah, it was right. Even the one Kessel goal from the right circle where it looked like it was going wide and it hit Hank's shoulder or the shaft of his stick, whatever it was. Just a really rough series for Hank, right, Nick?
It wasn't his best performance, and the way this Rangers team was playing all year long, they needed him to be a god, to be a better than average team. That they were an average team that with Lundqvist in god mode, they were able to maybe beat a team or two. But when Lundqvist was playing pedestrian, which he did, and it happens, you know, how many years can he carry this team? The Rangers got beat.
Eric Staal, I brought this up when they first got him. Fans were excited. I said, let's keep our emotions in check here. This is not Eric Staal from 2009. He was, I don't know if brutal is too harsh of a word. I don't know what word you guys want to use, but Eric Staal was not very good. There's just no way around it.
He just seemed lost.
He did.
It wasn't
the fit that they were hoping for.
The entire time, you know, there was like those games against the Islanders and the one against the Penguins where he scored, where he looked good, and you kind of thought, all right, this is our third line center. Things are going to be pretty good. And then he just looked lost.
Yeah.
And there was nothing really that could be done about it. I mean, I thought at some point they were going to put him in the top six, at least give him a chance with some of the skilled guys. But he just looked lost. The whole team looked lost. It was just bad.
I don't think the Rangers were expecting 2009 Eric Staal, but they were hoping for lightning in a bottle, maybe a flash of it and two games out of a series to give him a chance.
They needed more than what they gave up for him.
They got nothing out of him. They needed something. Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, they gave up it's not like they didn't give anything up. 2 second-round picks and one of their better prospects. I mean, it was a hefty load to pay for a rental to take a shot for him to come in and lay an egg. The worst part is playing with Kevin Hayes, they had no chemistry.
Well,
I mean, they dragged each other down, both of them. He got benched. Like, you would think the two of them are two big bodies. There's going to be a lot of different things that they can do. Nothing. Not even signs of life when they were together.
Just it's a really hard way for this season to end, guys. It really is, because, like I said at the start of the show, this was supposed to be another long spring.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about this in a couple weeks down the road, just where they go from here. But, again, no answer for Crosby, no answer for Malkin. The Penguins look loaded. And some of the decisions AV made over the course of the series, to dress 7 defensemen and Dylan McIlrath isn't one of them, what does it say about how the Rangers feel about Dylan McIlrath?
It's tough to go down watching Rafael Diaz on the ice for the Rangers after not playing
all
year.
How do you dress 7D and one of them is a guy who wasn't here all season?
I guess he still did. He wasn't ready to trust McIlrath. And we could bash AV for a lot of things, and sometimes his handling of young players is one of them. But he seems to get the most out of the majority of young players who come up needing stuff. Fast, he turned JT Miller into a heck of a player, and people want to say that Miller could have been that sooner if Vigneault gave him more responsibility. Well, he did it, and here he is turned into a player. So you have to think, for McIlrath's sake, he needs to be in the top 6 next year or he needs to be shipped out.
Well, how, he's not even in the top 7 when their season's on the line.
It was for actually the Diaz thing I understood, because it seemed like for a long time Elaine Vigneault wanted Rafael Diaz, and look, I think he's an okay player.
Right.
I don't think he's great, but it was just
not Larry Murphy. I mean, let's not.
Right, it was just the continuing of when he was going to replace Dan Boyle. It made sense. Diaz for Boyle makes sense, because at least you're thinking Diaz can help you on the power play. You're really just looking to win one game. But why McIlrath? You know, the idea that he was situated as the 7th defenseman the whole season, even when it was clear that Dan Boyle needed 5 games in a row off.
Yeah.
And McIlrath needed to play and didn't. That was the really strange thing with Vigneault. And I don't know that there's really an answer as to, because I don't think it's a matter that he doesn't like him. It might be that he doesn't trust him or he doesn't trust his skating yet. But, I mean, frankly, and I'm not the coach or a scout, I thought McIlrath was pretty good in his time this season.
Yeah, I just don't.
They won the only game he played.
Right.
It was game 2.
Well, there's that. And he didn't play a lot, but you're right. And just for me, with all these goals that the Penguins are scoring and all the celebrations, why not have McIlrath stand in front of the net and knock somebody on the rear end?
Make it, Hornquist
anything.
Dominated them. Right. That's a guy who the one guy who McIlrath would stand a good chance at neutralizing is the player like Hornquist, who's a body in front, and you just didn't see it. But you could go back all year. The team, they just never had an identity.
I feel
they
like
never
we
found
spent
themselves
show after show
waiting,
talking
for
about McIlrath and saying, when is this guy going to play?
Yep.
It was, if for all that AV might not have liked about McIlrath, whether it was his skating, his decision making, the one thing that the Rangers did consistently all season long was leave the front of the net open. You just put McIlrath
there.
That's
his bread and butter.
Just tell him, don't move.
Right.
Stay in front of Henrik Lundqvist and make sure
don't screen him.
Right.
But stand somewhere in front of the net.
Stand around the crease and make sure that, and keep your head on a swivel to make sure that there's not a guy open at the side of the net. That was never there, because you always had 2 defensemen going out to chase different guys. The opportunity for McIlrath, it was definitely missed this year.
I mean, this is not 1975 Broad Street Bullies kind of stuff
anymore.
Nobody still
has a role.
It's a skill league now, but there's got to be some intimidation factor when you're playing this Penguins team that is just loaded from top to bottom. And without Dylan McIlrath, who's gonna play that role?
It seemed no one. McIlrath has a role that nobody on the Rangers can match. Kevin Clyde could try his darndest, and he's good at some aspects of it, but he's not going to fill the role that McIlrath does. But Vigneault seemed to believe that the Rangers could go toe-to-toe with the Penguins. It's how he played it. He had no matchup for Sidney Crosby. He didn't try and match him up with his $8 million defensive first winger, who, by the way, had a good playoff series. He scored 2 goals. Nash was good.
He was good.
But he wasn't
up. You're absolutely right.
He wasn't matched up against – the Rangers had – there was no consistency to the matchups. You would think, to me, the way Nash was playing, I would want him out against Crosby to try and neutralize him. never saw it. He was instead on an offensive line, and sure, he scored two goals. Okay, you could give him the golf clap, but Crosby owned the Rangers. 8 points?
Yeah.
You know, and Kessel was, they
were
seven all
from Alkin,
scoring.
Coming back from injury.
That was, to me, that's one thing that, it's why I picked the Rangers in the series, was I thought McDonough and Malkin, who was back first and more effective, I thought it was going to be McDonough just because of how long Malkin was out, and it wasn't even close. Malkin was Malkin.
Adam, how much blame do you give AV for this series?
I think he deserves a fair amount. I mean, I've always defended him this year as saying he's not the guy on the ice who's turning the puck over.
Yeah.
So he can't take all of the blame. He's not the guy leaving the front of the net. But there's no doubt that he was out-coached by Miles
no
in this
question.
Series.
Yes.
And that he probably out-coached himself, just kind of overthinking how to do things, like Nick was saying. Just like, there was nothing consistent there.
Let's get Brett Sergalis' take. He joins me now on Rangers Blue Line. Hi, Brett. What's new, buddy?
What's up?
Some news broke this morning. I know you weren't there, but Dan Boyle was pretty critical of you and colleague Larry Brooks. What's your take on this whole situation?
Boy, what's my take?
Remember, this is a family show.
Yeah. My take is that, you know, Dan has his own opinion about the way he was treated here. And that is...
By you or by AV or a combination of both?
I know it's pretty clear how he feels about how he was treated by the media.
Right.
And he decided to point to Larry and I. And so just from my perspective is I don't think we ever treated him unfairly. I mean, the last story that I wrote when he was a scratch in Game 5, the lead was his terrific career.
Uh-huh.
It might end like this. You know, the guy had a great career.
No question.
There's no disparaging
yep.
how good he was, in Tampa and in San Jose. But he never fit here. He never found his game. And I don't know if he was in denial that was the case. Because any time you talk to him about it, the only thing he would say was he would continually harp on the fact that he wasn't getting enough ice time and he was adjusting to how much ice time he was getting. And the role wasn't exactly what he thought it was. And the system wasn't how he thought it was. And, you know, if you're with a team in the second year, you're with them and you're still talking about the system.
Right.
Maybe it's not the system, maybe it's the person who's not adjusting to the system.
Just the guys that are here, Brett, even when he got here, I mean, how much ice time was he expecting? I mean, did he think he was going to play 25 minutes a game?
Yeah, and you know what? It's not like he was getting 10 minutes a
right.
game. You can't find your game in 16 to 18 minutes a night. I mean, I that's all I make of it. And he gets he's frustrated with the way he was covered. And, you know, so be it, whatever. I'm not taking it to heart. These kind of things happen.
Sure.
He gets frustrated, let's just let it blow over. The guy had a terrific career. I'm not upset about it. I hope at some point he'll get over it.
Okay. Do you think that the fact that they had seven defensemen in the lineup in their last game of the season and he wasn't one of them, that had to play a role in his frustration, right?
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure. I mean, he was frustrated. He was frustrated since day, let's say it after first training camp. He started being frustrated, you know?
Right.
I mean, the fact, and yeah, it was, there has to be indignity in the fact that they dressed seven defensemen, and one of them was Rafael Diaz, who had not played in the NHL all year.
Right.
So, yeah, how does that feel? And knowing that this was probably going to be his last run. That's the way it ends with, Rafael Diaz playing, Brady Shea playing in front of you. You're in the lineup. I'm sure it was tough for him to take, and I'm sure that added to his frustration. And he feels like he got railroaded by us, and that's why it kind of came out. And I don't agree with that, but, it's the way it ends.
All right, let's move on. The guys and I were talking about the way AV handled this series. How do you think he handled it?
It's hard. It's hard to know exactly how much blame Vigneault should get because I'm not in his meetings. I don't know the system backwards and forwards. Like, here's a good example, Bri. The goal that in Game 5, that the go-ahead goal, where they went up 3-2 that Russ scored,
right.
Yandel gets the puck on the boards, turns it over. Okay, puck circles around. Yandel ends up chasing Matt Cullen to the top of the zone and where Miller is. And Miller's right there, and then that's how Rust gets so open. Daly finds Rust in the back post. So is that Yandel's fault that he chased Cullen and left Rust, or is JT supposed to slide down and get Rust there? You know, I don't know the system.
Right.
Like backwards and forwards like they do. So there's poor, you know, and the fact that they had trouble defending the front of the net for the entire year, how much of that is guys not doing it and how much of that is what they want? You know, so I think that all kind of goes back to how much blame does Vigneault have? How much blame should he shoulder? And the fact is that, you know, what we know is that guys that were on this team that were stalwarts were not as good this year as they had been in the past, regardless of the system.
Yeah.
You know, Mark Stahl, you know, Ryan McDonough, Mark Stahl, Dan Girardi, those guys are the core of this team, and they all had down years. Henrik Lundqvist had a down year. You know, so how much of this goes back to the coach is it's hard to say, but you know, but it's not to absolve him from blame either, because if that is the system or if things were going awry, maybe he needed to do something different. Maybe he needed to nip it in the bud before it got out of control, before it got to the point where, you know, they in that series where things got out of hand. It's tough to know exactly how much to blame him. I do think he's a good coach, but I do think that he probably could have handled things differently, and I think going forward he's going to have to do things a little bit differently regardless of who's on his roster.
How does he feel about McElrath, Brett? I mean, this is the 10th pick in the draft a few years back. They dressed, like I said, with Boyle. They dressed 7D with their season on the line, and he's not one of them. I mean, is there a future in New York for Dylan McElrath?
There should be.
Right.
I don't think Vigneault cares that he's the 10th pick in the draft. Or, you know,
of course, right.
But there was a bit of hesitation to get him in the lineup on a daily basis, and it was confusing. You know, the fact is Vigneault wants guys that can really skate, and that's not Dylan's strength. He wants guys that can really move the puck, and Dylan has shown that when he's playing his game, when he played those 10 games in a row in December, he showed that when he gets, you know, into the groove of the team and playing every night, that he can make that quick first pass. You know, he doesn't quite have the vision of Keith Yandel, you know, looking at the ice, but he can make that quick chip pass and he can move the puck out of his own zone. As for his future, you know, it really depends on a lot of moving pieces. You know, what are they going to do with Girardi?
Right.
You know, Yandel's an unrestricted. What are they going to do with these guys? Where are they going to be cap-wise? There's a lot of moving parts to find out, you know, what exactly his future is. I don't think Vigneault doesn't believe that he's an NHL guy. I think he does believe that he has a chance to be an everyday player. He even said that in the middle of the year, that he's proven that he could be an everyday player. Now, why that didn't manifest in him playing every day,
right,
you know, is the confusing part. But there's, you know, there is a chance that he could be a solid contributor next year, and there's a chance that they could look to flip him here and see what they can get back if they really don't believe that he's going to fit into the mold of this team. So he's an absolutely interesting case.
Last question before I let you go, Brett. Erik Staal, -7 without a point in this series. I mean, doesn't get much worse than that when you throw into consideration, too, of what they gave up to get him.
Yeah, you know, that turned out to be a bust.
Yeah.
It really did.
Yeah.
And from what I read, from what Erik said today, you know, he didn't get into the role that he thought he didn't get the role he thought he was getting when he came here. You know, he kind of gets bumped. They tried to play him in the middle, didn't really work. With Hayes on his wing, then they bump him to the wing with Hayes in the middle. You know, that's a tough spot to be in. They have him killing penalties. They have him not playing a ton of minutes.
Yeah.
You know, and now what for Erik Staal?
Right.
You know, now does he become a guy that signs 1-year deals around the league for the rest of his career? Because it's hard to imagine how he's going to fit into the future with the Rangers. Especially after, you know, it's not that he played that poorly. It was just, he, you know, but you can't just give a guy a free pass for being on the ice for a ton of goals. It's not like they were his fault, but they happened, and he was unable to produce one, you know. So, yeah, that's one they're going to be, you know, scratching their heads over for a while.
Yeah, they gave up a lot. They've given up a lot of draft picks over these past few years. Brett, thanks so much for a few minutes, pal. You took it like a champ. I appreciate it.
All right, you got it, Brett.
All right, buddy. Anytime. Thanks. See ya. Thanks to Brett Sergalis from the New York Post. Look, Dan Boyle, like Brett said, he handled that like a pro, because Brett is the consummate pro. Dan Boyle, it did not work out here. He was at the end of his career anyway. It was a 2-year contract, so it wasn't crazy as compared to some of the contracts the Rangers have handed out in the past pre-lockout. Why you feel the need to call out a couple of reporters when your season's over? He didn't play well. That's the crux of it. If AV thought Dan Boyle could help, he would have been in the lineup with their season on the line, right?
I don't know if he expected them to write that he was playing well even when he wasn't,
right?
Because he all they wrote was facts. He didn't produce the way he was being paid to produce, and he didn't do the things the way the Rangers wouldn't have traded for Keith Yandel if Dan Boyle was doing the job he was brought here to do.
Right.
I mean, he didn't handle it the right way. Maybe he wanted to get his say in the only way he could before he left town, because that's it. He's going to leave New York. I mean, he's probably going to ride off into the sunset again. Like everybody's saying, he had a great career, not a shining moment, and as Brett said, hopefully one that'll blow over.
It just seems like his time in New York wasn't what anyone expected it to be, and it didn't lead to what anyone wanted, which was ultimately the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
So if Dan Boyle ended up being a healthy scratch, but the Rangers won the Stanley Cup, I'm sure he wouldn't have been thrilled, but they would have won the Stanley Cup. I just think that in regards to the guys from the Post, I think that from Boyle's point of view, I think that he might have felt a little singled out, especially Larry Brooks, who continually went after, not necessarily going after Boyle as much as going after Alain Vigneault for the concept of not putting McElrath in over Boyle.
Right.
I never really read it as a shot at Boyle, more just like, something needs to change.
Yeah.
And you can't just stick with something that's not working.
You would just like to see a guy who's had the career that Boyle's had go out, I don't know what to say, with class, because
this be the last memory.
Just say, I wish things had gone better here. Yeah. I wish I had done my end of the bargain a little bit better. But to just call out a couple of reporters when things didn't go the way you want, like Brett said, the first day of training camp last year, he's talking about ice time and he's not getting the opportunities. I mean, come on. I mean, he knew the day he signed that Ryan McDonough's the guy here, right?
Yeah, I can't imagine what he was expecting. I mean, maybe
you're not going to supplant Ryan McDonough and play 25 minutes a game.
Maybe he was expecting to be paired with McDonough or more time on the second pairing. I could see the ice time issue after the Keith Yandel trade. Maybe he felt like he wasn't getting the power play burn, but he didn't deserve it.
It's a really sour way for this to end for Dan Boyle.
The other thing with Boyle that never clicked for him was the Rangers' style of play.
Yeah.
Because like Brian Leetch, who used to carry the puck up the ice, that's what Dan Boyle did throughout his time in Tampa and San Jose, but that's not often what the Rangers do. The Rangers, it's quick passes out of the zone, and everyone goes up the ice together. That wasn't Boyle's thing, and so I think that he never fully adjusted to that.
This won't cheer up our audience either. The New York Islanders have moved on to the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs for the first time since 1993. Check out the Islanders Point Blank podcast with myself and Mike Carver. Islanders and Lightning should be a really fun series, and I think one that could go the distance, boys.
It's going to be fast.
Yeah,
I mean,
really
it's
is.
Two teams that played a style that, and being a Rangers fan and watching the Rangers, that dismantled the Rangers over the past few years. They're just, it's the two teams who the Rangers couldn't keep up with, really, even during the regular season. And that's exciting because it's going to produce to really good hockey. I would wager that it's going to be fairly high scoring, and it's tough to bet against the Islanders when John Tavares is on the ice.
I think it's going to present a much different challenge.
Yeah.
For the Islanders
Very
than
different.
The Panthers
yep.
did. Because, A, you've got Ben Bishop, who's really good.
They've played well against him for whatever reason.
Well, I guess I'm only thinking about when Bishop plays against the Rangers, and they've never scored a goal. But then you're also playing a very experienced team.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hedman is much better than anyone on the Panthers' defense.
I would agree with that.
And I think that Tampa has guys who can score, and it didn't seem like the Panthers really could. Now, I'm not counting the Islanders out because Tavares is the best player in the world right now.
The Panthers didn't score as much as they wanted to because Thomas Greiss was off the charts.
He was good, but I just didn't feel like they were as offensively as inclined as Tampa Bay is with guys like Kucherov and if Johnson's healthy. And
if Stamkos comes back.
Who knows? He skated today.
Yep. We'll see what happens with that. Find both shows on the SNY.TV Hockey Podcast channel or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll do Pens and Caps here for a second before we close out. We'll be back next week at some point. This is going to be an unbelievable series, fellas. Yeah. This one is going seven games. Book it. It is going to be awesome hockey from start to finish.
I would say this is also going to determine the representative of the Eastern Conference in the Stanley Cup. Wins this goes to the finals.
I think whoever wins this is probably going to win the finals. Now that LA's out and Chicago's out.
Count out my Ducks, boys.
The Ducks
have to get there.
Get past Nashville. Dallas, it's going to be a whole different NHL playoff and one that's going to bring a lot of these names that deserve to be household names in this country are going to become them. The Tarasenko's, the Philip Forsberg, if he gets Nashville past them.
Well, Tarasenko's got to get on the ice to become a household name.
But he's still unbelievable. I mean, that release that he has, it's right filthy. There with Kessel. It's unbelievable.
I think Jamie Benn's going to get more attention now. He won the point race last year, and still I don't think he's as common as a name as some of these other guys, at least in talking to average NHL fans. So I think it'll be exciting to see a lot of new names, a lot of new players enjoy some spotlight.
And that Ovechkin guy, people might start talking about him.
You think they'll talk about Ovechkin versus Crosby at all?
Maybe. I mean, I think Brian Rust, Jay Beagle is a big matchup. But, Crosby, Ovechkin, Kuznetsov, Malkin, those are subplots, you know.
It's going to be awesome. We'll be back next week to recap the entire season and look ahead to the offseason, which it's going to be a very interesting and maybe busy offseason. I don't know if it's going to be as busy as Nick Lacazze thinks. He's already got all these trade ideas that we're going to discuss next week.
Has his work cut out for him.
He sure does. Boys, great show. Thanks again to Brett Sergalis. Don't forget, we're on Stitcher, TuneIn, Audioboom, and SoundCloud. You can always go to iTunes. Just search SNY.TV Hockey, and please make sure to rate and review the show. I'm Brian Compton. Thanks for listening to Rangers Blue Line. See you next week.
This has been the Rangers Blue Line Podcast, part of the SNY.TV Audio Network.